You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 1st of October 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, normally we would have Grandpa Dan with us today, but he is otherwise undisposed. So you have a solo podcast from me. I have two articles to get into, but perhaps we may only have time to get into the first one. And the first one actually comes from Wales. A landmark statue to Wales's first black head teacher was unveiled to the public today after the pioneer topped a vote in a campaign seeking to honour hidden heroines. And this is interesting, isn't it? Could they not find any better hidden heroine than simply a teacher? Does this not really suggest that we don't actually have that many great female heroines from the past? Great heroes of the past that happen to be female. I would suggest that all mothers are heroines for bringing their children up, all good mothers, that is. I mean, even mothers that aren't that good, they've still gone through the pain of childbirth. Couldn't they have put up a statue to honour motherhood? Betty Campbell, who died in 2017, aged 82, proved her doubters wrong after being told as a child that achieving her dream of becoming a head teacher was insurmountable. And why was it that she was told when she was a child that it was unlikely she would be a head teacher? Probably because she wasn't very bright. Probably because she wasn't doing very well in her schoolwork. It certainly wouldn't have been because whoever it was thought, well, you can't possibly be a head teacher because I don't like the colour of your skin. I mean, that is ridiculous. Idea. Far more likely that she just wasn't very, very bright. So the teachers were just being realistic and saying you might be better off trying for another career. Betty, whose full name was Rachel Elizabeth Campbell, was born in 1934 in Cardiff's Bute Town Docklands area to a Jamaican father and Welsh Barbadian mother. And when you look at the pictures, you can see that the mother was not Welsh. The mother was of Barbadian heritage. You can see that her heritage is a mix between white people and black people. So her ethnicity was Barbadian or Caribbean. It certainly wasn't Welsh. I guess they like to say that she's Welsh because she was born in Wales, although that doesn't affect your ethnicity now, does it? She trained as a teacher and rose to become head of Mount Stuart Primary School in the Docklands, despite being left in tears as a pupil after being told her dream would not happen. And I would guess that that's a completely apocryphal story there about her being left in tears, just to add some emotional interest to this story. And it's not even as if she was actually a secondary school teacher. She was a primary school teacher. What is it that this teacher did that was so spectacular that she needs to be honoured with a statue? I mean, you compare the past statues that we used to put up. We used to put up statues of people that left lots of money to a city, lots of endowments, and built hospitals and built homes for the poor and schools for the poor and set up scholarship funds for people. That's the sort of thing that we put statues up for, or people that laid down their lives in war, or who won memorable battles and secured the freedom for our people, or secured the freedom for other people. But simply being the head teacher of a primary school, is that really that out of the ordinary that she should be honoured with a statue? Of course, that's not the real reason why she's been honoured, is it? The reason they've given her this statue is simply because she's black. Hundreds turned out to watch the unveiling of the £75,000 statue, as friends and family proclaimed that throughout her life she championed her multicultural heritage. Well, again, is that any different to anybody else? I mean, of course, that's her heritage. Of course she's going to champion her heritage. Everybody should champion their heritage. It's only white people that are told that we should not be championing our heritage and we should feel guilty for our heritage. Mrs. Campbell becomes the first non-fictional woman to be honoured in a public space in Wales. Professor Uzo Iwobi, founder of the Race Council Cymru, said, "Wales has shown that this black woman truly matters to us all." Why does she matter to everyone? Again, the only reason why this has been done is because she's black, and because we are trying to portray this false idea that black people have always been in Britain, that they've always been a part of our history. And the truth is that Britain was 99.9% white until the end of the Second World War, when mass immigration began. And we are to blame for this, because we looked at what was happening in Germany and we saw that we had defeated Germany, and the German women were clearing up piles of rubble and wheelbarrowing piles of rubble. And we looked at ourselves and we thought, well, our women are piling up piles of rubble and clearing it away in wheelbarrows. This shouldn't be happening, because we won the war. Somebody else should be doing this. And that was why we started importing people from the Caribbean to do this. And there were people that spoke up and said, this is not a good idea. You are importing a completely different race into the country with a completely different culture, and that will cause friction. But they were in the minority, and certainly in the minority amongst the politicians, and anybody that did speak up about it, of course, was ostracised, as we saw happen to Enoch Powell, the greatest prime minister that the country never had, a man with more support than any other politician had ever had, one of the greatest speakers that we have ever had. And he was completely ostracised by the mainstream media and by the political establishment for actually speaking up for the people. And if you want to learn more about that, then check out our Greatest Britain's four-part mini-series on Enoch Powell. Mrs. Campbell was a county councillor for Cardiff's Bute Town ward, and was also a member of the committee which prepared for the opening of Wales National Assembly in 1998. She was also a member of the Broadcasting Council for Wales from 1980 until 1984, and served on the Home Office's Race Advisory Committee. So all pretty uneventful, really. Nothing particularly spectacular. Perhaps they have some children whose lives she spectacularly changed by being the primary school head teacher. I don't even remember who my primary school head teacher was, and I doubt whether many of the people in her school remembered who she was. Perhaps they remembered who she was because she was black, because that may have been a little bit out of the ordinary back there in the 1960s. I guess it would have been, unless she was the teacher at a specifically black school, or a majority black school. I should imagine she did stand out slightly, so that's why people remember her. And really, this just shows how generous and how charitable we actually are as a race. We're honouring this woman with a statue simply because she is black, simply because we want black people to feel as if they are a part of our country, basically. I mean, they can't be a part of our nation because they're not part of our ethnicity. And it is wrong to use the word nation and think that a nation can be multicultural. The word itself comes from the Latin word natal, which means birth. It means people that are united through birth. It means an extended family, an extended kinship group. And yet today we have changed the meaning of the word nation and try to make it apply to all different ethnicities living together in one territory. And that's not strictly correct. A UK-wide survey of statues carried out in 2018 found that just one in five statues in Britain were of women, with most of fictional characters or unnamed figures. And, of course, that's because throughout most of history, women have fulfilled the role of being mothers, which is an essential role for women to fulfil. Otherwise, the nation would just die out. And we are on a course to die out with the number of people that we are producing to replace ourselves. It's at about 1.7. Other parts of Europe, it's down as low as 1.2. I think in Germany, it's down as low as 1.2. And it needs to be 2.1 just in order to replace ourselves. So now we no longer have the majority of women spending their lives being mothers. And we have women doing things that traditionally men used to do. And the result of that is, okay, we may have some more statues of women doing things that men used to do, but within 100 years, the nation could die out. I mean, it's not really a very profitable exchange for us now, is it? The unveiling of the statue was due to take place in 2020, but it was delayed due to the coronavirus pandemic. It came after a panel of experts made a list of 50 historic Welsh women after finding there were no statues celebrating heroines in Wales. Well, hang on a minute. She's not Welsh, though, is she? She's black. She may be a British citizen, but she can't be a citizen of Wales. And her ethnicity, as we have shown, is from Barbados. Her ethnicity is Caribbean, so she's not actually Welsh, is she? This is somebody that just happened to be born in Wales. That doesn't make you Welsh if you just happen to be born in Wales. It wouldn't make me Jamaican if I happened to be born in a hospital in Jamaica. I would still be British because that is my ethnicity. That is my heritage. And surely if they had 50 historic Welsh women and the greatest of them just happened to be a primary school teacher, that really doesn't say much for the standards of historic women, does it, really? If the very best of them was just a primary school teacher, okay, it's an important job. It's a more important job to be a secondary school teacher and an even more important one to be a scientist or a politician or a philosopher or anything that could have actually changed the course of history. But essentially all this woman was doing was looking after small children. Helen Molyneux, founder of Monumental Welsh Women, said she hoped the statue would inspire the next generation of Welsh women. Inspire them to what? To become primary school teachers? Betty's impact during her life was incredible, but as with so many women throughout history, likely to be forgotten or overlooked by future generations, unless something was done to bring her to people's attention, she said. Well, where is this great impact that she actually had? Surely they could be able to find somebody whose life was changed in a fantastic way, or many people's lives who were changed for the better because of this woman, but they can't actually find any. It's amazing, really, that they haven't, because you would think they would try to do something like that to back this up, that she really was an incredible woman, but it doesn't look like it. The monument, created by Eve Shepherd, will certainly achieve that. It is a truly iconic, beautiful piece that will attract the world's attention to Cardiff. I should imagine it will make much of the world actually laugh at this and think, what is going on in Cardiff? What is so special about this woman? And they can't actually come up with anything. And they put this great statue up so that people that remember this woman, but what are they supposed to be remembering her for? Her daughter, Elaine Clark, said she was extremely proud and privileged to have her mother remembered in such an iconic way. And yes, it's going to be great for the family, I would imagine. She said, through her sculpture, Eve encapsulates Betty's legacy of determination, aspiration and inspiration that reflected her passion for diversity and equality, making her a truly positive role model for many in the community and beyond. So we have a sentence there filled with all the usual buzzwords: diversity, equality, positive, community. Former pupil Chantelle Horton said she had been a pioneer for change. The thought of Betty's statue fills me up, and the wonderful opportunity this memorial brings for Mrs. Campbell's story to reach so many more from here on, she said. So again, neither of them can actually bring up anything that this woman did that was so extra special that she should be honoured with a statue. Geraldine Trotman, a friend of Mrs. Campbell, whose children were taught by the teacher, told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, she instilled a sense of pride and a sense of belonging in all the pupils that attended. And again, that's just what a teacher should do. I mean, what has she done that is so above and beyond what head teachers or what teachers should normally be doing? I mean, all teachers should be instilling a sense of pride and a sense of belonging in their pupils, and we don't do that anymore to white children, do we? We don't instill a sense of pride in white children. White pride is a terrible thing. That's supposed to be all white supremacist and racism. White people are supposed to be feeling guilty for slavery, never mind the fact they actually did away with slavery. And how are white people going to have a sense of belonging when you tell them that they don't have an ethnicity all to themselves? Everybody else does, of course. There's a black ethnicity, there's Chinese ethnicity, Indian ethnicity. But if we say, well, we have a white ethnicity, we have an English ethnicity or a Welsh ethnicity, we're told, oh, no, you don't. Anybody else can be Welsh and anybody else can be English. All they have to do is be born in your country. So we're effectively having our heritage taken from us and transferred from us to another group. We're effectively being stripped of our identity and saying that it is not an exclusive identity that we have, and that these other groups of people, they can take our identity, and at the same time, they can also retain their own exclusive identity. It's all very one-sided, this, isn't it? Geraldine Trotman added, Betty was one character. Betty was a strong character. She was determined to do it her own way, and no one could stop her. Well, what is it she did in her own way? Where was it that anybody tried to stop her? I mean, it looks to me as if black and minority ethnics are being given every possible help they can be given to advance in society. There are quotas that companies have now to employ a certain number of black and minority ethnics. They get extra grants to go to university. Judges have been told that, that they should not put so many of them in prison, and they should bear in mind that they may have been the victims of discrimination. They need to get the numbers down of them that are in the criminal justice system. Schools have been told that they have to divert resources towards them. There are all sorts of grants and loans that are given out to black people to encourage them to stay on at schooling and get into secondary schooling. I believe we have the NHS are saying they want to have 20% non-whites working in the NHS. And all of this is basically giving them a help up the ladder. And yet we're told that she faced all these insurmountable odds and everybody was trying to stop her. And yet they can't show any evidence of people trying to stop her. And the way that it looks to me is that it's the opposite of people trying to stop black and minority ethnics from advancing. We're trying to do everything we can to help them advance. And we're doing everything that we can to replace our own people. That's why I say it's maladaptive. The way we are behaving as a people is maladaptive. The statue is being unveiled near Central Square, Cardiff, after being designed and created by Eve Shepherd. It came after the Hidden Heroines campaign asked the public to vote from a shortlist made up of five historical Welsh women for who they would wish to see immortalised with such a statue. And I wonder whether people really did actually vote for her, or whether the judges decided that they would pick her in order to represent how multicultural Wales is today. Because we know that in things like, I forget what it was called, one of those chef programmes with the best chef in Britain, and they actually admitted, they said, well, we picked the woman that won the best chef competition to reflect the diversity of the country. They didn't actually pick her because she was the best chef or created the best food. They picked her simply because she was black. And I think that's what they've done here. They decided to pick this primary school teacher and honour her because she was black. Sheffield-born Eve said Betty was all about community and passing knowledge on from person to person and from one generation to another, and I've tried to capture all of that in this statue. I think it's been long, long overdue. And I don't just mean because of the delays we've faced during the pandemic. We've waited hundreds and hundreds of years for women and people who are non-white to be put on plinths, especially in Wales. And so to have a statue of a successful and inspirational black woman in Wales is just amazing. Well, there's lots there, isn't there? I mean, really? Have we been waiting hundreds and hundreds of years for women to be put on plinths? Really, if you asked 100 years ago, if you asked a British woman whether she was waiting there, desperate to see a woman on a statue, I should imagine she would say, well, we've got Queen Victoria on a statue, haven't we? We've got representations of queens and princesses and other famous aristocratic women. We have statues of them on plinths. And if you were to ask them whether they were waiting to see a non-white person on a plinth, they would say, well, why would you want to be putting a non-white person on a plinth? This isn't Nigeria. Surely it's Nigeria or Jamaica that is going to be putting up statues of non-white people on plinths, because it's their people. It's their extended family that live there. Why would you want to be putting somebody on a plinth that is not a part of your family in your family's homeland? I'm sure that's what people would have said 100 years ago. They certainly weren't waiting around desperate to see non-white women in statue form. And I think it's clear that is what is the point here. It's the fact that it's a black woman. That's why she says it's so inspirational to have this successful black woman on immortalized in a statue in Wales. But I don't see what is so inspirational about it to make it to being a primary school teacher. But there we go. So, I mean, really, they're making this big thing about it, but it's really quite condescending, isn't it? Because it's really saying that all that black women, the greatest heights that black women can actually get to is being a primary school teacher. And it's quite embarrassing, really. I don't think I'd be too pleased at that if I was a black woman and I saw that. I would think, well, surely there are black women that have done more important things than being primary school teachers. But there we go. That's the way that things are, isn't it? We have this hypocrisy and this condescension that we see from the left. The next news story I want to get into today comes from Germany, and it concerns somebody we have spoken about before, the Tea Lady of Stutthof concentration camp. A former secretary for the SS commander of the Stutthof concentration camp was being sought on an arrest warrant on Thursday after skipping the planned start of a trial in Germany on charges of more than 11,000 counts of accessory to murder, officials said. The 96-year-old woman left the home where she lives in a taxi on Thursday morning, heading for a subway station on the outskirts of Hamburg. German news agency DPA quoted a Itzehoe state court spokesperson as saying her destination was not known. So this is a 96-year-old woman that is being tried in a court for essentially making tea when she was 16 years old at Stutthof concentration camp, and for typing out letters for the people that were actually running the camp. And they're now charging her with 11,000 counts of accessory to murder. Presiding Judge Dominic Gross said the court had issued an arrest warrant and it remained to be seen whether she would be caught. Prosecutors argued that the woman was part of the apparatus that helped the Nazi camp function during World War II more than 75 years ago. The court said in a statement before the trial that the defendant allegedly aided and abetted those in charge of the camp in the systematic killing of those imprisoned there between June 43 and April 45 in her function as a stenographer and typist in the camp commandant's office. Was she typing the people in there to death? Was she using this typewriter in order to kill these people? Of course she wasn't. Of course she wasn't. She was just functioning as a secretary for the people that worked at the camp. And why shouldn't she do that? I mean, Germans were helping other Germans in the war. They themselves would have been put in the camp if they'd been working against their government and against their country. Despite her advanced age, the German woman was to be tried in a juvenile court because she was under 21 at the time of the alleged crimes. German media identified her as Irmgard Furchner. She was actually 16 when she started working at the camp, I think, or 17. She was actually under 18, so she should be tried in a court for under 18-year-olds. And I do wonder what the actual limits of punishment are for under 18-year-olds. And the thought that they're going after her now when she's 96 years old, I mean, this is so vindictive. The case against Furchner relies on German legal precedent established in cases over the past decade that anyone who helped Nazi death camps and concentration camps function can be prosecuted as an accessory to the murders committed there, even without evidence of participation in a specific crime. So even if there is no evidence whatsoever that the person actually helped to carry out any crimes whatsoever, they can still be found guilty of being an accessory to murdering 11,000 people. And this really does make a mockery of the legal system. A defence lawyer told Der Spiegel magazine that the trial would centre on whether the 96-year-old had knowledge of the atrocities that happened at the camp. And she's already admitted that she didn't know anything about any atrocities happening at the camp. My client worked in the midst of SS men who were experienced in violence. However, does that mean she shared their state of knowledge? That is not necessarily obvious, lawyer Wolf Malkentin said. And of course, the problem with this is if she comes out with evidence to say that she didn't see violence happen, then she will be accused of denying the Holocaust. So she can't say that, and her lawyer can't say that, because then they will be breaking another law. So she really can't defend herself. I mean, what's actually happened is the prosecutors can just make this allegation and you have to be found guilty because you're not allowed to defend yourself, because if you defend yourself, you're breaking the German law about denying the Holocaust. According to other media reports, Furchner was questioned as a witness during past Nazi trials and said at the time that the former SS commandant of Stutthof, Paul Werner Hopp, dictated daily letters and radio messages to her. Furchner testified she was not aware of the killings that occurred at the camp while she worked there. So she's already testified under oath that she was not aware of any killings. But of course, they can say, well, you're denying the Holocaust because we know that these killings took place there. And yet there's never been any autopsies done of any gassed victims. Nobody found to have been gassed in an autopsy report in the whole of the Second World War. It is all based upon circumstantial evidence. The Americans and the British, all the camps that they liberated, they didn't find any evidence of systematic killing or gas chambers. It was Stalin, and he was the one that said that the camps that he liberated, that they had gas chambers in them. And of course, we couldn't go there to check, because they were occupied by the Soviet Union. And Stalin's testimony is suspect, because he also said that the Germans were guilty of the Kachin massacre. And the Kachin massacre took place in Poland. And during the war, the Germans discovered this mass grave in the Kachin forest. And I believe there were 20,000 Polish upper classes, intelligentsia, aristocrats that were buried in this mass open grave. And the Germans said, we need to have impartial observers here. This needs to be investigated. Please bring in some impartial observers to investigate this, because this is nothing to do with us. We have just discovered this. And the Allies refused to send in impartial observers. And at the Nuremberg trials, the Germans were accused of carrying out this massacre by the Allies. And they were found guilty of it. And then when the Iron Curtain fell and the Soviet Union was no more, it was admitted by the Soviet Union that they were the ones that actually killed all these Poles, 20,000 Poles in the Kachin forest. So Stalin's testimony cannot be trusted. We know that he has already lied and blamed the Germans for killings that the Soviet Union carried out. So how can we trust him when he says that when they liberated camps they discovered gas chambers when, in all the camps that the British and the Americans liberated, they found no gas chambers. Getting back to this article here, initially a collection point for Jews and non-Jewish Poles removed from Danzig, now the Polish city of Gdansk, Stutthof from about 1940 was used as a so-called work education camp, where forced labourers, primarily Polish and Soviet citizens, were sent to serve sentences and often died. So it was a work camp. It was for the war effort. They needed people to work to produce things that they needed for the war. What would be the benefit in them killing their workers when they needed them for the war effort? Again, this is something that doesn't make sense about this narrative that we're given about the Second World War. From mid-1944, tens of thousands of Jews from ghettos in the Baltics and from Auschwitz filled the camp, along with thousands of Polish civilians swept up in the brutal Nazi suppression of the Warsaw Uprising. Others incarcerated there included political prisoners, accused criminals, people suspected of homosexual activity, and Jehovah's Witnesses. And of course, they were all people that were seen as being a threat to the war effort. Political prisoners there, well, that they're going to be working for the enemy. Accused criminals, they're going to be taking advantage of the war so that they can rob people. People that were suspected of homosexual activity, that was repeat offenders that were put in there. And Jehovah's Witnesses were seen as a parallel spy agency because they would collect information on the German people. So people that are actually put in these camps were put there because they were a threat to the German state. And we did the same thing in Britain. As soon as there was the outbreak of war, anybody German in Britain was put within one of these camps. As soon as there was the outbreak of war against Japan in America, anybody Japanese was put in these camps. As soon as there was the outbreak of war, Jews that had proclaimed their loyalty to the Allies and to America and to the countries that were trying to make war against Germany, they were put within these camps. Jews that were supporting Germany and were supporting National Socialism, they were not put into these camps. Some of them fought alongside the Germans in the war, and others of them were encouraged to emigrate to Palestine, and the Germans helped them to emigrate to Palestine. Anybody who is interested in hearing that untold story should look at the series that we did called Jewish Immigration in the Third Reich. It's a real eye-opening series, I can tell you, that goes into details on the founding of the State of Israel. Finally here, it says, more than 60,000 people were killed there by being given lethal injections of gasoline or phenol directly into their hearts. Now, how believable does that sound, that to kill somebody, they're going to inject petrol into their heart? I am sure there were much easier ways to kill people than by injecting petrol into their heart. It also says here, or being shot or starved. And again, why would you be starving your workers? Why would you be shooting your workers? You need these people for the war effort. And if you were to be doing things like that, there would be witnesses, there would be bodies. They've never actually found the bodies. Of course, they claim that they were all cremated, but the numbers that they actually give, it's impossible to cremate that number of people in the cremation ovens that they had. It says here, others were forced outside in winter without clothing until they died of exposure, or they were put to death in a gas chamber. And again, the actual details of how they were supposedly gassed don't add up. Apparently, at Auschwitz, they were throwing these pellets in through holes in the roof, cyanide pellets. Cyanide has to be heated up into a gas before you can actually kill people. You can't just throw pellets in through the roof. And of course, this idea that people would go into showers and then the gas would come out of the showers, again, that's impossible. You can't do that with plumbing. Things just don't work that way. The logistics don't work. And of course, when people have actually gone to these camps, Fred Lucia famously went to Auschwitz and he tested the walls there for traces of cyanide. And of course, he found lots of cyanide where it's supposed to be, in the delousing machine, because cyanide was used to delouse the clothes of the inmates at the work camp so that they didn't all get typhus and die. They found lots of traces of cyanide there, but they found no traces of cyanide in the alleged gas chamber. And the alleged gas chamber, according to the blueprints for Auschwitz, was just the cold room for the morgue. It wasn't actually a gas chamber. So where does this idea come from, that there were gas chambers? Well, it comes from Stalin saying that he found them. And it all comes from, also comes from supposed eyewitnesses. And on top of that, at Nuremberg, there were confessions. But the confessions, it has been found out, were obtained through torture. And in some cases, the people that were confessing had had their testicles smashed beyond all repair. They were threatened with having all their family killed and raped and handed over to the Bolsheviks. So their testimony cannot be relied upon. The eyewitnesses then that we have left that were relied upon, they came out with things that don't add up. Again, they said that there was different coloured smoke that would come from the chimneys when Jews were being burned. It would be a different coloured smoke. The way that they actually described the gas chambers working, it was impossible to work. And you don't know whether they were deliberately doing it. I mean, it may have been that there was hearsay in the camp. There was gossip in the camp because there was a lot of gossip that went on. And people would say, the Nazis are gassing us. And this rumour would go around the camp. And in actual fact, in some of the places that the British liberated, they actually sent out messages saying that anybody that would say that would be court-martialed because it was exciting the people, and it just wasn't actually true. And finally, as a final point to this, in the 90s, Ernst Zundel published a book called Did 6 Million Really Die? And he was taken to court in Canada for this, and it's known as the Great Holocaust Trial. And what they did, they actually brought in the world's foremost experts on the Holocaust from the Holocaust Museum, Yad Vashem, and they also brought in the surviving eyewitnesses. And Ernst Zundel's lawyer cross-examined the surviving eyewitnesses, and the surviving eyewitnesses were shown to not give truthful testimony, so they couldn't be relied upon. So in actual fact, it basically showed that the eyewitness testimony was false. And also the experts from Yad Vashem were forced to admit that there was no evidence for any order being given out to actually gas the people that were in these work camps. So there's all sorts of parts to the story that need to be properly investigated. And that's what historical revisionism is. It's investigating these things. But in Germany, you can't even talk about them. So if this Furchner, if she was to try and provide a defense against this accusation, and she was to say, for instance, well, can you show me an autopsy report of any of these people that were allegedly gassed? If she was to say that, then she would be locked up for Holocaust denial. So she can't actually properly defend herself. So she's obviously gone on the run, which must be very difficult for a 96-year-old woman. But what a crazy world we live in, where we go after 96-year-old women for making tea to help the war effort 75 years ago, and we put up statues to honour primary school teachers simply because of what race they are. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.